Okay. So Rabbi said, we just began yesterday the machlokes is here between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir as to how it is that the get, or perhaps other shtari kinyan function, is it by virtue of the fact that there are witnesses assigned on the bottom that attest to the contents that are mentioned in the shtar, or is it because it's handed over in the presence of witnesses? But it comes up over here in the course of the Gemara's discussion and discussing Rava and Rabba's interpretation of the Mishnah. Well, Rabba says the Gemara, two lines from the bottom of Gimel Aleph. Just read it again. Well, Rabba Damo Fisha Ein Bikiyum Lishma. According to Rabba, that the whole purpose of Befanai Nechtam, of the Shliach bringing the get from Medina Sayyam, attesting to the fact that the get was written Lishma and signed Lishma. Man hai tana de boi ksiva lishma o boi chasima lishma. Which tana holds that you need the ksiva and the chasima to be lishma? I Rabbi Meir, if it's according to Rabbi Meir, chasima boi, ksiva loi boi. The chasima has to be lishma, the ksiva doesn't have to be lishma. Again, we explained yesterday, or began to explain, that the pasuk says, v'kasav la'sefer, krisus v'nasim b'yod, the pasuk in Parashas Ki Seitzi, from which we derive v'kasav la lishma, that the get has to be written lishma. But which part of the get has to be written lishma? So according to Rabbi Meir, it's the chasima sa'edim has to be written lishma. And of course, there's a requirement of edim by the get. The pasuk says, because of umatzaba ervas davar, he found something that was objectionable. We're davar. We derive exer sheva davar davar mi mamon. The pasuk says, by mamon al pishnaim edim al shosha edim yakum davar. So we derive davar davar mi mamon, just like you need two witnesses, by mamon is to attest to the fact that the money was borrowed or lent or something like that in order to prove it in court. So too, by a get, there's a requirement that there be two witnesses. So Rabbi Meir believes that we kind of blend these two requirements of the cause of love, lishma, and the signature and the, you know, the presence of two witnesses, that where do you need the witnesses primarily? You might need additional witnesses as well, but at least primarily, according to Rabbi Meir, the requirement for witnesses is on the chasima saget, and that chasima has to be lishma. See, Rabbi Meir, chasima boy, ksiva loy boy, but the Torah faget, meaning the contents of the get, the story of the get, of the divorce, that's what's described in the get, the 12 lines of the get, that doesn't have to be written with Shema, only the Chasima Sa'edim. Desnan, in Kaisim and Mechubel HaKarka, because the Mishnah says you cannot write the get of Mechubel HaKarka, because if you write the get of Mechubel HaKarka, you won't be able to give it to her right away. You're going to have to detach it from the ground first, because the Pasuk says, because of Lasefer Krisus, Vinasan Beyada, you can't put a tree in her hand, you can't put a building in her hand. So you're going to have to detach it from the ground before you hand it to her, which means that there will be a hefsik, there will be a break between the writing of the get and the signing of the get and the handing it over to her. So you can't write the get when it's mechubel karka. But kasva mechubel karka, tol shum, you detached it, chasma, and you signed it after it was already detached from the ground. V'nasan lo kosher. Rabbi Meir believes which part, you know, what are you not allowed to have a hefsek between? Is it the writing of the get and handing over the get to her, or is it the signing of the get and then handing it to her? It's the signing of the get. Because Rabbi Meir believes the ikar of the the focus of the writing of the get, when we said because of law, sefer krisus v'nasim b'yad, is really talking about the chasima sa'edim, not the writing of the get itself. And that's why the Gemara here at the bottom of the Amud Gimel Mebeis is going to quote the opinion of Rabbi Meir. Afilu matzah ba'ashva, even if you find the get in the garbage that happens to have the name of the chasim, the name of the kala, the name of the husband, the name of the wife, but it wasn't written for their sake, it wasn't written lishma, it doesn't matter. You can find that get ba'ashva chasma v'nasim la kosher, and you sign it and give it to her, it's all fine. What has to be written lishma? The chasima sa'edim. That's what has to be signed lishma. So why, according to Rabbi Meir, why would you have to say b'fanai nechtav? Why would the shliach who's bringing the get b'dinas ha'am have to testify that it was written in front of him lishma? It only has to be signed lishma. Okay. E Rebbe Lazar, ksiva boy, chasima loy boy. According to Rebbe Lazar, the requirement for edim is at the time of the giving over of the get. It has to be given over, handed over in the presence of two witnesses. It doesn't have to be signed necessarily by two witnesses. And in fact, what then is v'kasa of law, law lishma, referring to? Not the chasima sa'edim. According to Rabbi Elazar, the real requirement for edim is on the mesiras haget, not necessarily on the signing of the get. So then, it might not have to be signed by witnesses at all, which is what we're going to see in a second. So, if that's the case, what is v'kasa of law lishma referring to? It's not referring to the chasima sa'edim. There might be no chasima sa'edim. It's referring to the writing of the get. The 12 lines of the get have to be written lishma, nothing to do with the chasima sa'edim. So, okay, so according to Belaza, the ksiva has to be lishma. Ksiva boy, chasima loy boy. But you don't need chasima sa'edim. So it should have just said, b'fanai nechtav. You didn't have to have b'fanai nechtav. This machlekes between, just parenthetically, we're going to get more into it, as we mentioned yesterday, between Rabbi Meir and Belaza, is only talking about a shtar, that's a shtar kinyan, not a shtar raya. If you look later on, on Chav Beis, Amud Beis. Yeah. Where's the part that I asked you to see? Basically, Maso Avo Bishtaris, yeah. Yeah, Tosis has a line. That the only time there's a machleik is between Rabbi Elazar and Reb Meir is if it's a shtar that's affecting a change. Where was it? It was one by one of the Yishlaimars. Here. The Yishlaimar, three lines from the bottom of the middle. I mean, it's a long time since doing Masa Avu B'shtaris. The Gemara there is just bringing the machleik between Reb Meir and Reb Elazar about Edi Mesira Karsi. Is it the handing over in front of the witnesses that seals the get or makes the get effective, or is it the signature of the witnesses in the bottom? The Tosfos says Yishlaimar, three lines up in the middle lines. There's wide lines, narrow lines, and middle length lines. So in the middle length lines, three lines up from the bottom. Yishlaimar the Hadika Amar Hacha Aval B'shtaris Loi. That by shtaris there is no dispute. Hanimili b'shtaris ha'amdim l'raya. Even Rabbi Elazar agrees. Here, we can see it inside. Let's just go back. Yeah, the Mishnah here says. Here, look back at the Mishnah Chafal from Abayz. The Mishnah says in Chafal from Abayz, you cannot write the get on something that can be forged. If it's something that can be forged, you can't write a get on something that can be forged. So there's certain kinds of paper that can be easily forged. You can't write the get on that because you never know if you write a get with disappearing ink or like in pencil, right? That's not a good get because you know Yahu is daif. But the Chachamim allow it. So look at the Gemara, even though it could be forged. Man Chachamim, who are the Chachamim? I'm a Rebbe Elazar. I'm sorry, it's Rebbe Elazar. Man Chachamim, I'm a Rebbe Elazar. Rebbe Elazar he, the Amar Rebbe Eliezer, Rebbe Elazar he. Rebbe Eliezer, the Amara is saying it's Rebbe Elazar, the Tana, who holds the Amar Edi Mesira Karsi. Meaning, what is the main effectiveness of the get? Where is that achieved? Not in the fact that the get is a shtar that proves something that's signed by witnesses. It's rather the fact that it was handed over in front of witnesses. So even though it's Efshel is Daif, it can be manipulated a little bit. It can be forged. It doesn't matter. The real effectiveness doesn't come from the fact that it proves anything necessarily. It comes from the fact that it was handed over in front of witnesses. That's the focus of what the shtar is here coming to achieve. Well, you see from this Gemara, Shechter discusses this at length in the Eretz HaTzvi, quotes it from Salvechik, that it sounds like the machlokes between Reb Meir and Reb Elazar is how does a shtar work? Is a shtar, the fact that it was signed by witnesses and therefore can prove something? Now, it might have been commissioned by the person who the shtar implicates, and that's what goes to the effectiveness of the shtar we've discussed for the last 2 days, the Das HaMeschayev. But it was written by the person who the shtar obligates or implicates, and that's what makes it not testimony, written testimony, but something that's called a shtar, because it implicates me and I'm the one who asked it to be written. But it doesn't work because it can necessarily prove anything. It works because it was handed over in the presence of witnesses. And therefore, even if it's able to be forged, or possibly forged, doesn't matter. The fact that it's written in pencil doesn't matter for a Belazar. According to a mayor, no, that's exactly the problem. According to a mayor, the way a shtar works is not that it's like a story that was written with my consent that implicates me or obligates me and was handed over in the presence of witnesses. What a shtar really is something that is something that's able to be proven. Either that proves something or that's testimony that implicates me or obligates me that was written, in a way that can prove a point or that can give testimony to a certain point. Therefore, if it's able to be forged, and that's why it has to be signed by witnesses. Because according to Reb Meir, what a shtar really is and the way that it's effective in achieving some sort of change, is improving a point. And I enabled, or I conceded, to put this proof out there, or to put this testimony out there, that's signed by witnesses, that implicates me or obligates me, that's the way a shtar works. But then according to Reb Meir, it can't be that it's able to be forged. If it's able to be forged, it doesn't prove anything, it doesn't testify to anything, because it was written in pencil. So there's no raya, there's no edus, there's no nothing. According to Rabbi Elazar, that's not the way a shtar works. It's not meant to prove anything necessarily. What a shtar works is that I said something, and there's a story that's told here about me that implicates me and obligates me, and was handed over in the presence of witnesses. So according to Rabbi Elazar, even if it's able to be forged, or possibly forged, extra to his daif, it doesn't really matter. The focus or the active ingredient of a shtar is not going to prove anything or testify to anything necessarily. It's because it's a story that I allowed to be written that implicates and obligates me. Yeah.
According to Rabbi Meir, can you forge a signature then also?
So that's why according to Rabbi Meir, it can't be in any way something that's forged. Meaning, yes, of course you could forge a signature, and that's why we say sometimes Gittin and Shtaris have to be verified and need a Q and a Shtar. Generally, we don't assume that something is forged, but it can't be written in pencil, right? If it's written in pencil, it's a joke, right? What kind of, here, you know, here's you'd be a fool to give a check to someone in pencil, you'd be a fool to, you know, assume that the IOU written in disappearing ink means anything, right? It's actually his diet. The whole thing is, it doesn't mean anything. There's no proof of anything. So according to our mayor, it's a huge problem to have a shtar or a neged in a way that screams that it could be forged. According to us, it doesn't matter because it's not about proving or testifying to anything. It's about handing over a sefer dvarim, a story that implicates me and obligates me, and I conceded to hand it over in the presence of witnesses, and I'm okay with it. That's what, you know, that's how it works. According to Rabbi Elazar, I'm an Eid Masir Kar, see, even though it's Efshulah's diet, the Shtar is still okay. I'm a Rabbi Elazar, go Hikshir, I'm a Rabbi Eliezer, go Hikshir, Rabbi Elazar, go Alter, Kanvad Asar Yamim, lo Chayish. Even Rabbi Elazar only allowed it, lo Hikshir, Rabbi Elazar, go Alter, only if it's right away, meaning the immediate aftermath. You want to prove something here, from this shtar that was handed over 10 days later, of course, even according to Elazar, it wouldn't work. Or maybe there was a condition that was mentioned at the time that was later forgotten. So the get can only work, you know, if it's used right away on something that's Efshulah's daif. Because maybe there was a condition that was mentioned in the time of the get that was lost because it was only oral. It wasn't written down. Rabbi Yochanan, if you want me to come back, sorry, yeah. Okay, well, okay, you know, if we ever get up to this, we'll discuss that more. Right. But then the Gemara goes on. The only time Rabbi Elazar allowed a shtar to be written on something that's Efshulah's daif, that's possible to be forged, is a get. Shar shtaris loy. On other shtaris, no, the sieve. The pasuk can say for Yemiyo, that's the whole source for shtaris we've discussed a few times. The pasuk says, "V'nechtam b'klicheres l'man yamdu yamim rabim." It should be signed on a earthenware vessel so that it can stand for many days and not be forged. L'man yamdu yamim rabim. So if you want to, you know, for other shtaris, it has to be written on something that's efshulah's daif. It has to be written on something that cannot be forged. So Rabbi Elazar only allowed this, or only held this position, Eidi Mesira Karsi, that you don't need witnesses to sign on the bottom, and it can be forged, because the way a shtar works is not by proving any point or testifying to anything necessarily. What a shtar works is that I hand it over a written story that I'm maskim to, that implicates and obligates me in the presence of witnesses. But if it's shar shtar, that's a get. Shar shtar is loy. What is this distinction between a get and shar shtar? So that's exactly what Tosfos here is coming to comment upon. And Tosfos here throws up a major distinction or limitation, the homophlex between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir. It says Tosfos, the hadikamar hacha of al b'shtar is loy, that according to Rabbi Elazar, you know, Rabbi Elazar would concede to Rabbi Meir when we're talking about shar shtar is, hani mili b'shtar is ha'omdim l'raya. It accomplishes a change. In that moment, that's like a get. So Tosfos here is distinguishing between a distinction we made earlier in the name of the Nesivos, between a shtar kinyan and a shtar raya. If it's a shtar kinyan, it's affecting a change, then Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir have their dispute. How do you affect a change with a shtar? How does a char, go about creating that change in ownership or change in status if it's a shtar kiddushin or shtar gerushin? Is it through Eidi Mesira, handing over a story that implicates and obligates me in the presence of witnesses, even without the signature of any witnesses at all? Or is it through, having a document that implicates and obligates me that's serving as proof or testimony of witnesses that I obligated or implicated myself? So according to Rabbi Meir, that's the way a shtar works, even if it's a shtar. According to Rabbi Elazar, it works because you hand it over in the presence of witnesses. But according to Elazar, you can't prove anything later on because the witnesses are no longer here. If you hand it over a get in the presence of witnesses, but no witnesses sign the get, how is this woman ever going to use this get as proof that she's divorced? Only if you could bring the Eidi Mesira later. So even Rabbi Elazar agrees, if you're talking about a shtar raya, a shtar that's not meant to affect the change immediately, but it's meant to prove a point later on, a mortgage. So then even Rabbi Elazar would agree that you need witnesses to sign on the bottom. Otherwise, how else do you prove this point later on in time? It can't be you're going to summon the Eid Mesira every time. So Rabbi Elazar agrees, if you're talking about a shtar raya, of course, Eidei Chasima Karsi. What creates the validity of the shtar is the fact that there's Eidei Chasima on the bottom. What makes it effective is the Eidei Chasima. We could debate a shtar kinyan that affects a change immediately, a shtar kiddushin, a shtar geirushin, a shtar mecher. I'm selling something, I'm selling my comments to the guy, and I hand over a document to him that describes the sale. Is that affected by the shtar Eidei Mesira, the two witnesses who are watching me hand over the shtar to the guy, or by the witnesses who sign on the bottom? But by a shtar raya, what kind of shtar raya is it? The fact that you hand it over in the presence of witnesses if there's no witnesses who sign on the bottom. So Taisus here, based on this distinction, the Gemara draws over here, that even Rabbi Elazar concedes, Bashar Shtaros, Taisus says, it's talking about a shtar raya. Why? We understand why. Because by a shtar kinyan, we can debate what the, you know, how a shtar works. That's the debate between Rameh Rabbi Elazar of Salvation to explain. The Shef likes to quote it. It's in his Sefer Eretz Tzvi. What they're arguing about is, how does a shtar work? Is it Eidus Bechsav or a Raya Bechsav? It was written with the consent of the person the shtar implicates. Or is it Sipur Dvarim? Just a story that was handed over in the presence of witnesses. That's how, you know, the debate over the effectiveness of a shtar kinyan. For a shtar raya, of course, there has to be witnesses that sign on the bottom, and the fact that it was handed over in the presence of witnesses doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Just to drive the point home, where does this come up ever? It comes up by every wedding. Every wedding. Why? After there's really two stages to marriage. There's kiddushin and nisuin. Rabbi Will likes to tell the story that once there was a... It's always scary being Masada Kiddushin. I could tell this from my own personal experience when there's a very experienced other Rav who's there, who's way more qualified than you, who is watching every move that you're making. I could tell you as a young Masada Kiddushin. Therefore, I will refuse to be Masada Kiddushin if there's someone like that there. You know, big community personality or Shashiva who's way older and more qualified than myself, I'll usually refuse. But sometimes it doesn't work. You can try and refuse all you like. It doesn't, you know. Whatever. Sometimes they won't hear of it, or the other person doesn't want to do it. It is what it is. So I can tell you, it's a scary thing. But Baruch Hashem, you know, whatever. Everyone has their own stories. But once this young guy was being Masada Kiddushin, Rabbi Willig was there. That was mistake number one. But anyway, he got up to speak in between the Kiddushin and the Erusin, Kiddushin and the Nisuin. You know, when he gives her the ring, and then they make the Shevar Brachas. So that's usually when the rabbi speaks. So he got up to speak and he said, we've done the betrothal and now we're about to do, you know, the marriage. Ray Willig said he protested in the middle of the speech. No, Kiddushin is not a betrothal. The engagement. He called it the engagement and the marriage. Ray Willig said, no, it's not an engagement. The Kiddushin is a marriage. It's a betrothal. That's why we refer to it as a betrothal, not an engagement. An engagement is meaningless. I mean, you break an engagement, it's devastating emotionally, but not halachically. Break a Kiddushin, they're already in Asia's ish. So he amended the rabbi's speech from engagement to betrothal. But anyway, an embarrassing moment. I don't know who it was. It wasn't me, but thank God. But yeah. Anyway, a kid, sir. But we have two stages to the marriage. Is when the husband gives the kala the ring in the presence of the witnesses. That's the Kiddushin, first stage of marriage. She's in Asia's ish. She'll be mezana with another man. She'll be chayav misa. But then she's not permitted to be with the husband either. She's prohibited to be to everyone. Prohibited to everyone. That's what we call kiddushin. She's also kehektish. Also kuli alma kehektish. She becomes permitted to him at the time of the nisuin. That's why the barach on the kiddushin is also lanos harusais vehiter lanos and asuas lanoi dechupa vekiddushin. So you're permitted to your wife by virtue of the nisuin. She becomes an eshes ish beveis habal. But they're both in Eishes Ish. They're both fully married, al pi halacha, and should be mezan with another man. Chayav Misa. But we have these two stages to the marriage, Kiddushin and Nisuin. We usually split it up, either with a rabbi's speech, or we split it up with a reading of the Ksuba. Why do we need to split it up? Because the problem is you're making a Bari Pri Agaf, and each one of these stages is made over a kos of wine. So the Kiddushin is made over a kos of wine. The rabbi makes a bracha, Bari Pri Agaf, and the chasen kala drink, then he gives her the ring. In front of the two witnesses. But first we drink. The Birchas Nisuin as well. Of course, Bari Pri HaGafen comes first. At a Shevar Brachas throughout the rest of the week, the Bari Pri HaGafen comes last because it comes to connection with benching. If you've ever benched at a Shevar Brachas, you know that. At a wedding, the Bari Pri HaGafen is first. So we start with the Bar Priya Guffin. What entitles us to make a Bar Priya Guffin, wait 30 seconds, and go back and make another Bar Priya Guffin? It's a Bracha Shein Atzricha. So in order to split up between the Kedushin and the Nisuin, we have a Hefsik. What do we have as a Hefsik? What's the filibuster? Reading the Ksuba. Reading the Ksuba is not a halachic matter at all. Anybody can read the Ksuba. It's a time filler. Some people are careful about who should read the Ksuba so that people shouldn't make a mistake and think that some people who are disqualified from other parts of the wedding are actually qualified and therefore they give them to read the Ksuba. So some are careful to have whoever is qualified to perform the other parts of the wedding should read the Ksuba too. So generally the custom is to give to a rabbi to read from the Ksuba, but it's really just a filibuster. If the rabbi wants to speak, he can speak then. If the parents want to give brachas to their children, I've never seen that, but if they would want to do that, they could do it then. You want to waste all the time in the world, you know, with all your announcements and all your whatever. In between, the Kiddush and the Nisuin is a great time. We're trying to waste time. It's a filibuster. Why? Because we're going to make another Priya Guffin in order to, there shouldn't be a Bracha Shein Atzricha. You should waste time then. You should not waste time after the Sheva Brachas are over, before you get to the Yichud Room. That's not the time to waste time. Because according to some Rishonim, the Birchas Nisuin are Birchas HaMitzvah over the Nisuin, and according to some Rishonim, the Nisuin is not the Chuppah, that little canopy that we have. It should be a canopy, by the way. B'shal Tov Mitzvachas by everyone, yeah. I mentioned this last year. I went to a wedding recently where I was in Masada Kiddushin. Yikes. But I wasn't happy with the chuppah at all. Shai was, what do you do when you get there and you're not happy with the chuppah? It's not much to do. But they had two arches that were all fresh flowers, amazing. $100,000 in flowers. They had back. And they had something like some floating, weird, clothy ice thing on top, which I wasn't happy about. But the way a chuppah should be is that it should be two poles with a pole on top, two pole on top, you know, like a little tent with a cloth. That's what it should be. It doesn't have to be a talus. It could be some other kind of cloth. But that's the tzura of what a chuppah should be. It's meant to look like a little tent that he's bringing the wife into his rishus. So B'shal Tov Mitzvachas, make sure that you have a chuppah that looks like what a chuppah is supposed to look like. Anyway, I've seen rabbis stop it and put an ugly yellow talus that someone pulled out of their car, you know, on top of the chatzan kana. I wasn't about to do that at this wedding, but it wasn't great. But anyway, yeah, so some hold that that's not the chuppah. The real chuppah is the yichud room. So we're supposed to go quickly from the Birchas Nisuin to the Yichud Room. That's why sometimes the Chassan and the Kawa like to have the first dance from the Chuppah all the way to the Yichud Room. I was like, you'll have plenty of time for dancing. Let's just move now. We're on the way to the Yichud Room. Like, they're dancing with every guy who's there and every girl who's there. It's not the time. Let's get to the Yichud Room and you can have your dancing on the dance floor later on. Because you're supposed to move as quickly as possible. Meritzin, the Magen Avraham says, in order not to create a Hefsek. It used to be, Rav Schefter opposed at the time, he printed in the Sefer Bikvei Hatzon, therefore he argued against singing the Meshkachech. Because when do they sing Meshkachech? After the Sheva Brachas, before you get to the Yichud Room. And the Yekas sing Shir HaMalas, if you've ever been to a German wedding. So Rav Schefter argued, it's not the time for that. So at my wedding, I was a big chassidan, at my wedding, there was no Meshkachech. My wife was so angry. But at that, my wedding, I said, no, we got to move straight from the Sheva Brachas to the Yichud Room. 3 months later, Tani Cohen got married to Yaffa Shechter. We were all part of the same chavura. And at their wedding, they sang Meshkachech. And my wife was like, Tani could have a Meshkachech if Shechter's there. And whatever, we couldn't have a Meshkachech. Whatever it is, it's a good argument. But I still think it's compelling. But I'm not about to deny anyone their Meshkachech. But you shouldn't have my trauma. You know? I'm not interested in passing on my trauma with Dairis to other couples. But you should move as quickly as possible. But in between the Kiddushin and the Nisuin, we want to waste time. The Tafkid is to waste time. That's why we read the Ksuba then. Yeah.
Did you think about not holding hands going down the aisle?
We'll talk about another time, yeah. We'll talk about another time. But, yeah.
How long does that break? Does in between Kiddushin and Nisuin?
Usually we read the Ksuba. Then we go on and make another Bari Priya Gavra.
There's no, like, set time?
No. We do something in between. So the Ksuba is a time waster. It's a filibuster. Could anybody in the world get up and read the Ksuba? Could a non-Jew, a Gentile, read the Ksuba if he could read Aramaic properly? Yeah. Or better than the rabbi? Yeah.
I think last year it was in a recording. He said I don't want to quote exactly, but it was like a controversy because somebody asked, can a woman read it?
Shkayach. What do you think I'm avoiding? Yeah, okay. Yeah. Very good. This goes to controversy 25 years ago. Okay. You could Google it. Yeah, this is a controversy. Google it. Google it. Anyway, anybody can read the ksuba, pi halacha, but sometimes in order to prevent any kind of misconceptions about who is kosher for the other parts of the wedding, we try and be consistent that that people who are kosher for other parts of the wedding should do the ksuba too. It's a big kibbutz. It's usually the second biggest kibbutz at the wedding. The biggest kibbutz is Seder Kiddushin, and the second biggest kibbutz is reading the ksuba. Speaking roles, people like to speak. But anyway, getting back. So after you read the ksuba, what do you do with this ksuba? So you're supposed to give it to the kala, give it to the mother-in-law for safekeeping. So in our times, the olden times, we used to give it to the mother-in-law for safekeeping. She's there to protect the interests of her daughter. So they have to have the ksuba that obligates the husband and all the obligations that he's obligated in. But at many weddings today, it wasn't as common in my time, but it's very common today, you'll see rabbanim who demand that the chassan hand the ksuba to the kala in front of the Eidei Kiddushin. So a lot of times, the Eidei Kiddushin will remain under the chuppah. Watch carefully instead of talking or looking at your email. But you'll see the Eidei Kiddushin stand there, and the chassan hands the ksuba to the kala in the presence of the Eidim. Why would you do that? So some say, Eidei Mesira Karsi. Because according to Belazar, which may be the way we paskin, Eidei Mesira Karsi. It's the handing over of the shahr in front of the witnesses. That's what seals the shtar. So Shechler, Rabbi Vlach Shlita, who used to teach Seder Kiddushin here in the Sminchel program, always used to make fun of that. Why? Because even Rabbi Lazar, who holds Eidei Mesira Karsi, is only by a shtar kinyan, not by a shtar raya. If the shtar is affecting some sort of change, again, a shtar Kiddushin, then maybe handing over in the presence of witnesses what seals the shtar. If it's a shtar raya, if it's there to prove a point later on, even Rabbi Lazar would agree, what creates the effectiveness of the shtar is the shtar, the Eidim, who signed on the bottom of the shtar. Not Eidei Mesira, but Eidei Chasima. Even Rabbi Lazar would concede that point. That's exactly what our Taisa says. What kind of shtar is the ksuba? The ksuba is there to prove later on the obligations that the husband has, professed, that he will take care of his wife, support his wife, and obviously if the marriage will dissolve, he'll pay his wife a certain, sum. But it's a shtar raya to prove obligations later on. Not a shtar kinyan. It's not affecting any kind of change. The kiddushin is going to happen with a ring. It's kesef kiddushin, not shtar kiddushin. So why would you have to hand it over in the presence of witnesses? In fact, Rabbi Bleich felt that it's a kula. It's not a chumra. It's a kula. Why? Because if the kala is a nida, the husband can't hand over the chuppah, the ksuba to her. So if what you're doing is proclaiming to everyone that it is a chuppas nida or not a chuppas nida, terrible. Anyway, whatever. It is what it is. So you find Mesadri Kiddushin who are careful about this. Kilu, it's like a chumrah that they came with. Rabbi Shechter used to make fun of it because it shows a failure of understanding. You never learned Taizu, you never learned the beginning of Mesadri's Gittin, that even Rabbi Lazar's Shita is only limited to Shtari Kinyan, not to Shtari Raya. What are they thinking? Everyone there is Amarasim except for us? No. What they're arguing is the following. They're saying, and it's already found in the earlier Svarim, that no, maybe the Kesef Kiddushin wasn't good enough. Something went wrong with the ring. I don't know. So just in case we have a Shtar Kiddushin, what will be the Shtar Kiddushin? The Ksuba. Let the Ksuba function as a Shtar Kiddushin. But in order for the Ksuba to function as a Shtar Kiddushin, because the Ksuba describes that this Bachar said to this Besula, into Yisrael, that he proposed to her and he wants to marry her. So it kind of has the language of a star Kiddushin, so we'll hand it over in front of witnesses in case the Kesef Kiddushin, there's a problem. The ring, the parents were never Michael on the ring, they never gave him the money for the ring, he didn't pay for the ring, he didn't hand over the ring properly. In case something went wrong with the ring, we have the Ksuba to function as a star Kiddushin. It's strange. In which case, of course, you need Eidei Mesira. So it's strange, because the Kala doesn't think that it's a Shtar Kiddushin. How can she get married with Shtar? The Chassan doesn't know it's Shtar Kiddushin. No one says to the Chassan, have in mind for Kiddushin when you hand over the Shtar in front of the witnesses. So it's a Shvacha Chumra. If there's some rabbi there who's going to get all jump up and down about it, I'll do it. Just because, who cares? But, why you people are really opposed to it, because Shechter made fun of it for decades. So it's I can't be that guy, who Shechter's making fun of. I'm an Oretz who's handing it over in front of witnesses, because doesn't he know the distinction that Rebbe Lazar only said a Shita by a Shtar Kinyan, not by a Shtar, right? But if there's some, some rub there who I think is going to be mocked about it, I'll do it. But,
Is that only if there's problems with the ring that goes through?
Or yeah. Otherwise, why would you need to do it? The Shtar Kiddushin is certainly valid.
What would be wrong with the ring?
the guy didn't buy it himself?
Yeah, if the chassan doesn't own the ring.
A lot of things could go also wrong. The signatures might not be a good enough signature too.
Good, so let's have as many options as possible. The whole thing is strange, because at least to be a Shtar Kiddushin, the witnesses would have to know it's a Shtar Kiddushin, the Chasm would have to know it's a Shtar Kiddushin. He might have to say it to her when he gives her the Shtar Kiddushin, you know, that he's marrying her, which he doesn't say, you know, Harei Mekudesh, you know, with the Shtar, doesn't say anything, she doesn't say anything, no one has a mind, it's a little bit strange, or a lot strange.
If they did have a mind, it would be different?
Maybe we could debate whether a ksuba could actually be a shtar kiddushin or not. Some claim it's the kesef, the money that's in the shtar kiddushin, like a check. The ksuba is like a check. So it's another kesef kiddushin in case there's something wrong with the ring.
That's the whole point of the ksuba, other than that.
No, the ksuba is for it to prove that she is entitled to certain benefits during the marriage, and if the marriage will dissolve, that she's entitled to certain monetary payment. And so much so that Chazal said, you're not allowed to be with your wife unless you have a ksuba, because they want to protect her interests. But it's just to protect her financial interests and the obligations, enshrine the obligations the husband has to the wife. Nothing more than that, yeah. Oh, so Rabbi, so let's go back over here and continue on the Gemara. So the Gemara goes back. So who is this Tana then who held that the Ksiv has to be Goshma and the Ksiv has to be Goshma? According to Rabbi, the Ksiv has to be Goshma. According to Rabbi Gaza, the Ksiv has to be Goshma. So the Gemara says, V'chi teima le'aylam Rabbi Lazar hi. No, the le'aylam is Rabbi Lazar who holds. Who's the author of our Mishnah? V'chilo boy, Rabbi Lazar, chesima l'shma midoy raisa. Even though Rabbi Lazar doesn't require chesima l'shma midoy raisa, midrabbanan boy, midrabbanan, he does require chesima l'shma. No, that can't be, says the Gemara. Disnan, v'lo boy, v'hashloi, v'chilo boy, Rabbi Lazar, chesima l'shma midoy raisa, midrabbanan boy, v'hashloi, shagim sulin, midrabbanan, v'lo boy, Rabbi Lazar, chesima l'shma, but the Gemara brings a proof from a Mishnah, the Rabbi Gaza does not require chesim u'lishma, because the Mishnah says the following. We'll start the Mishnah, we'll have to continue next time. The Mishnah says, this non, gimel gitim, some Mishnah later on, peyvav and medalef, I suggest you see it there. But gimel gitim psulin, there are three gin that are possible, vim nises havlad kosher. So midoy rice is a kosher get, midoy rabban is not a kosher get. Kazab iksav yodo, if the husband writes to get in his own handwriting, vein olav edim, no witnesses signed. Yesh olav edim, there are witnesses, vein bozman, it doesn't have a time stamp. Yesh bo zman, there is a time stamp. Ve'en bo erechod, there's only one witness. Harei eilu shloshi gitim psulin, these are possible midaraisa v'mnisei sevlad kosher. But they got married, the vlad is kosher because midaraisa is a good get. Rabbi Lazar oimer, af al pi she'en olav edim, even if there's no witnesses, el shonasnu la b'fnei edim, no witnesses signed, but you gave it in front of witnesses, el shonasnu la b'fnei edim. Kasher v'goyim v'nichas m'shubadim she'en edim v'chayis m'na l'getim v'nei tikkun o'ilam. The edim only sign on the get, m'pnei tikkun o'ilam, not midrabanan. Meaning the get is kasher midoy raisa and midrabanan without chasim as ha'edim. M'pnei tikkun o'ilam, we recommended that witnesses sign the get. What's the tikkun o'ilam if she'll ever want to prove that she's divorced? She's going to need to show the get. So in order to be able to prove later on that she's divorced, we recommend that the witnesses sign the get. Meaning if the get will ever have to function, not as a shtar kinyan, but as a shtar raya, to prove that she's divorced, we need witnesses who sign on the bottom. So Rabbi Lazar recommends that you sign on the bottom too, so it could serve later on as proof that she's divorced. But midoy raisa, the get is kosher, even without any witnesses. So you see, both midoy raisa and midoy rabbanon, you don't need witnesses to sign on the bottom of the get, and therefore our Mishnah cannot be Rabbi Lazar. There's a big machlekes over here, though, between Rashi and Taisus, which touches on a get written b'ksav. Yeah, no, it's a very important distinction. Also in Hilchos Shtaros, which we'll have to...